This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
If you believe conventional political wisdom, Hillary Clinton will be the Democratic nominee for President of the United States in 2016. In most political coverage, that's a foregone conclusion. But politics is an unpredictable sport. And another name sometimes floated for a possible presidential bid is getting traction. Elizabeth Warren.
In a piece in the New Republic this week, Noam Scheiber argues that the Democratic Party is undergoing a sea change, one more focused on populist issues like income inequality and the need for more bank regulations. That, he says, bodes very well for Senator Warren.
Joining us now to discuss his article is Noam Scheiber. He's a senior editor at the New Republic, and you can find his article, Hillary's Nightmare, a Democratic Party that realizes its soul lies with Elizabeth Warren, at RadioBoston.org. Listeners, you can also join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We want to know what you think about this. Is Elizabeth Warren the best person to become the face of the party in 2016? And Noam Scheiber, welcome very much to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I want to note up front, before we talk about your article, that Elizabeth Warren was recently asked by the Boston Globe if she planned to run for president. And she didn't just say no. She said, no, 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 no. And then this year, she signed her name to a letter signed by all 16 Democratic women in the Senate urging Clinton to run. So she says it's not going to happen. But you say that some people have missed the point of your article when they focus on will she run, can she win. That's not exactly the larger point you want to get across. So I want to get to that. But would you first start by telling us what it is about Elizabeth Warren that you think she has going in her favor?
Yeah, well, if you look at where kind of rank and file Democratic voters have been and where they're headed, it's very clear that the party is moving toward Elizabeth Warren and not with the sort of Clinton-era new Democratic worldview. You can go up and down a series of polling questions. I cited some of them in my piece. But Democrats are just much more populist. If you look at, you know, their views of the banking sector, for example, Gallup has done some polling over the last few years. And, since 2007, negative views of the banking sector among Democrats have roughly doubled, and positive views have roughly dropped in half. If you look at the power of, and influence of large corporations, in the early 2000s, about half of Democrats were dissatisfied with that. Today, it's close to 80%. You look at inequality. Democrats attuned to inequality. That was kind of in the low 80s before the crisis. It's about 10 points higher now. Up and down the list, Democrats are just much more populist, much more sort of alienated. From you know, large corporations and the influence of large corporations, much more populist, that's just an unmistakable trend.
And you also make the point that it actually sort of electorally is happening. I mean, look at the Bill de Blasio election in New York. There's a guy whose whole platform is railing against inequality and vowing to tax the rich. You sort of see this as something not only that could happen, but that already is happening?
No question. And, you know, if you look at the composition of the U.S. Senate and who's been elected recently, you see it there, too. I mean, it's not just Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts. It's Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin. It's Chris Murphy, a progressive senator from Connecticut, replacing Joe Lieberman. You know, I actually talked to Chris Murphy for this piece, and he said that, you know, a few years ago, he was a congressman before coming to the Senate. He thought that Democrats in Congress were roughly split between Wall Street skeptics and Wall Street sort of sympathizers. And now it's more like two-thirds, one-thirds with the skeptics holding the kind of supermajority there. So it really is shifting. It's shifting at the grassroots. It's shifting kind of at the elite level, too, in the Senate of the United States.
You know, I want you, if you would, to sort of compare Elizabeth Warren's stance on these kind of working class issues to Hillary Clinton's stance. Because certainly Hillary Clinton will you know, say that she's an advocate of the working person and she's interested in some reforms. But Elizabeth Warren really does distinguish herself here. In fact, I want to play a piece of tape from when she did one of her Senate Banking Committee hearings talking about settlements with large banks accused of wrongdoing. Here's Senator Warren.
So the question I really want to ask is about how tough you are, about how much leverage you really have in these settlements. And what I'd like to know is, tell me a little bit about the last few times you've taken the biggest financial institutions on Wall Street all the way to a trial. Anybody?
Now, Noam, as you've noted in your article, this has been watched a lot. This has gotten
a
over
lot.
1 million yes. viewings. So explain why you think that something like that really distinguishes Elizabeth Warren from Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think we should give Hillary Clinton her due. She has been good on sort of middle class people's issues, working class people's issues in a lot of respect. Obviously, throughout the 90s, she worked very hard on getting health care to more people, which is a hugely important issue. Obviously, we're discovering that again today. So I don't want to be unfair to Hillary Clinton. I think what's new and different about what Elizabeth Warren is doing is sort of connecting what's going on at the top with what's going on in the middle and lower middle. And by that, I mean, you know, banking reform, the power of big banks, regulating big banks. It can be kind of an abstract issue, and it's not entirely clear at first glance how it relates to ordinary people's lives. But I think underlying it is a very passionate sort of emotional issue, which is it is not fair for us to have a political and economic system that gives the largest, most powerful institutions enormous economic advantages at a time when middle class people are struggling under the weight of home debt, you know, mortgage debt, student loan debt, rising foreclosures, just a variety of burdens, and, you know, at a time when their incomes are stagnating. I think it's the juxtaposition of those two things, the enormous advantages conferred on these very powerful institutions and the struggles that middle-class people are enduring that Elizabeth Warren is very good at connecting, and Hillary Clinton has just been mostly silent on at least the top half of that equation, on the advantages that are being heaped on these very powerful, wealthy institutions.
In addition to that, does Hillary Clinton also have some vulnerabilities here? Because even though she may be comfortable fighting for the working class, things get a little uncomfortable for her when it comes to criticizing the financial sector because she has friends and advisors from that world.
No question. I mean, this dates back 20, 25 years now. A lot of, you know, the people who donated money to the first Bill Clinton presidential campaign, a lot of the people who were Bill and Hillary Clinton's intellectual brain trust, you know, dating back even before that campaign and on through the present, were either sort of alumni of Wall Street, Robert Rubin being probably the sort of paradigmatic example, or people who were just kind of in sync with a sort of a worldview where the financial sector played a very prominent role in the economy. And that, you know, that goes through the 90s. It goes through Hillary Clinton's Senate career. And even today, you know, if you look at the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, a lot of the money that's raised to do many of the good deeds, and they are good deeds that the Clinton Foundation does, but a lot of that money comes from, you know, large financial sector interests. So it's been a connection that's been very longstanding. And it's not just sort of financial and economic. It's kind of social, psychic, if you will. I think these are just this is a world that Hillary Clinton feels very comfortable in, and it would be very difficult to sort of pull herself out of that world and reorient herself in a different direction.
All of which contributes, as you write, to this opportunity for Elizabeth Warren to really grab her populist message and use it to possibly go to the White House. On the other hand, we have seen more attempts at populism, like Howard Dean's run and the Occupy protests, that really kind of melted away. So what makes you think that it would be different for Elizabeth Warren?
Well, I should say in the piece I write explicitly that if Elizabeth Warren were to challenge Hillary Clinton, she would probably lose. I think we have to be very honest about that. These insurgent challenges often lose. Barack Obama is really the only one that we can think of that succeeded sort of in the last generation. That said, it's interesting. I spoke to a sort of senior operative for Hillary Clinton's 2008 campaign, you know, anonymously, but he was very candid. And when I asked him who Hillary should be worried about, Warren was the very first person he said. And then he elaborated in a very interesting way. And he said that if you look back to these challenges like a Howard Dean or like a Bill Bradley in 1999, 2000, challenging Al Gore, they tend to do very well among the sort of latte liberal set, college-educated, social liberals. But then they tend to kind of just die. They can't move beyond that demographic. What's interesting about Elizabeth Warren is even though she excites a lot of passions in that demographic, it's very much a message, again, student debt, credit card debt, mortgage debt that middle class and working class people struggle with. And so she has the potential, just purely kind of substance wise in terms of the issues that she cares about, to really expand beyond that demographic. Now, whether she's got the political chops to pull that off remains to be seen. But there's clearly room for her to grow message wise and with the set of issues that she's made her own.
Listeners, we're talking with Noam Scheiber of The New Republic about his recent article proposing that Elizabeth Warren might become a presidential nominee in 2016 and be a threat to Hillary Clinton. We want to get your sense of whether you think Elizabeth Warren is the best person to become the face of the Democratic Party, whether the party in general needs to change direction and focus more vigorously on a populist message. And if that's the case, do you think Elizabeth Warren is the person to do that? Are there risks to the Democratic Party if Warren jumps in, maybe an internal splintering? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Noam Scheiber, you just said a few minutes ago that you want to be upfront about saying that you wrote that you think that even if Elizabeth Warren were to run, she might lose. And certainly there's been a lot written about your article. Someone called your proposal fantasia, the idea that she could win. But as you said, you're clear that polling favors Hillary Clinton. 66% of Democratic primary voters identify her as their favorite. But your point has been that even if Warren were to run and lose, she might not mind because that's not her ultimate goal. So why do you think she would get in this?
Yeah, I think Elizabeth Warren, if you look back over her career, has always been someone who's been motivated by these issues. I mean, it really dates back to her childhood in Oklahoma when her father lost his job or was unable to work after having a heart attack, and her mother had to go to work, and the family really struggled to scrape by. She's been very concerned about, you know, about preserving the middle class, about how fragile a middle class existence is and how easy it is to fall out of the middle class. And it's really these issues, not sort of political aspirations, that have animated her. And, you know, there are a number of examples over her career. The most prominent, I think, is one that she writes in her book about. In the late 90s, she actually met with Hillary Clinton when Hillary was first lady and briefed her on a bankruptcy bill that was then pending in Congress, which would have made it much more difficult to declare bankruptcy for ordinary consumers. She talked to Hillary for about a half an hour. Hillary, she thought, was super bright and got it immediately. Warren believed, that Hillary persuaded her husband, Bill Clinton, to veto this bill in Congress. But the following year, Hillary was elected in 2001, Hillary was elected to the Senate, and she reversed her position. She actually voted for the same bankruptcy bill. And Elizabeth Warren was absolutely scathing. She basically calls it a betrayal. She goes on at great length in her book about this, and she was basically still talking about this last year during her Senate campaign. I mean, she didn't talk about it as much, but when asked, she definitely responded affirmatively that she still basically believed that. This is not the sort of behavior of someone who you would, you know, who is trying to ingratiate themselves to the powers that be in the Democratic Party. This is someone who is so exercised about what they perceive to be a betrayal on a core economic issue that they can't restrain themselves. They feel like they must speak out because it's just wrong. And I think that is the key thing to understand about Elizabeth Warren. And that's the reason that she would join a presidential primary, even if Hillary Clinton was the person that she was lined up against.
Meaning that she'd be willing to spend the money, spend the time, knowing she would lose, but just to have the megaphone to continue to basically advance her economic policy agenda.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, look, a lot of people have responded to my piece by saying, well, what if, you know, Hillary's a smart person. She understands the direction that the party is headed. What if Hillary were just to move in a more populist direction by herself on these issues? And my response to that has always been, well, that would be terrific. I think Elizabeth Warren would be very happy about that. She would feel no need to run for president at that point because her work would essentially be done. It's not that she has this sort of burning lifelong ambition to be president, though she's clearly a very ambitious person. I don't want to suggest that. But the ambition has always been around this issue and the set of issues, not about holding political office per se.
And do you think she also would have an impact on other candidates, in particular Hillary Clinton, in terms of how they run? You know, candidates who might be trying to avoid weighing in on certain issues, but might find it unavoidable if Elizabeth Warren were really pounding the platform as she ran?
Yeah, look, I think Elizabeth Warren is going to have an effect on the 2016 primaries and beyond, whether or not she chooses to get in the race. I mean, whatever she decides as a practical matter, her influence is clearly felt. I mean, you see it. I spoke to probably 8 or 10 other senators in the Democratic Party. They are very aware of Elizabeth Warren's presence in the Senate. They are aware of the way in which it constrains their actions on a host of issues from student debt to bank regulation. So I think she will continue to have that influence in the Senate. There's no question in my mind that that bank regulation, that giving middle class consumers and homeowners and college students a fair shake is going to be front and center in the Democratic primary campaign, whether or not Warren actually runs. It's just she's raised the visibility of this stuff by leaps and bounds, and you know she's not doing it out of thin air. As we said at the outset, the party itself, the attitudes of rank and file Democratic voters are really where she is on this stuff.
I'm talking with Noam Scheiber of The New Republic about his recent article floating the idea of Elizabeth Warren running for president in 2016. And Noam, we have several callers who want to weigh in. One of them is Steve from Cambridge. And Steve, your thoughts about all this?
Noam, two quick questions. Number one, when Elizabeth Warren was running for Senate, she said that she initially thought bankruptcy, when she started studying the issue, she initially thought that it was people's fault. Poor spending habits, et cetera, and that she underwent a very big change when she started studying. So I don't think she was always such a populist. And two, do you think she represents a kind of withering of the moderate faction of the Democratic Party, just as the Republican Party has moderate faction has withered?
It's a great question. The answer to the first question is yes, that is absolutely correct. I would put it this way. I think she's always had these concerns about the precariousness of the middle class, and that dates back to her childhood. But on the specific question of bankruptcy and people declaring bankruptcy, that is absolutely the case. She has been very explicit about this, that when she set out as a young law professor in the late 70s, early 80s to study the bankruptcy issue, her assumption was that this was a system that was being abused. There was sort of a bunch of deadbeats and freeloaders, basically, who were gaming the system so they could kind of wipe their slate clean after spending too much money. And what she found that was not the case at all. It was basically middle class people who had been hit by sort of staggering economic difficulties, you know, losing jobs or multiple jobs, debilitating illnesses, that sort of thing. And this was really their last option. So that is absolutely the case. And doing the research changed her mind on that, and she's been very upfront about that. On the winnowing of the moderate faction of the Democratic Party, yes, no question. I mean, I'll just take you back to the conversation I had with Chris Murphy, the senator. He is very aware, and he will tell you this if you talk to him, that the person that he replaced, Joe Lieberman, was, you know, at one point a president of the Democratic Leadership Council, this sort of moderate third way movement that Bill Clinton himself had chaired in the late 80s, early 90s. If you just look at who's left and who has replaced them, you know, time and again, if you go down the roster and in Congress and particularly in the Senate, it tends to be a sort of moderate, you know, new Democratish person leaving and a more progressive figure replacing them, at least when the seat remains a Democratic seat. So I think that's absolutely the case. And again, I mean, it's not hard to see why that would be the case if you just look at the numbers and where rank and file Democratic voters have headed over the last 10 years.
Steve, thank you for that call. Noam, we have more calls. Let's try to get a few more in. This is Doug calling from Acton. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Hello. I have already called Elizabeth Warren's office to talk to her staff to urge her to run for president. We absolutely need a voice like that. To me, the essence of Elizabeth Warren is her statement, the game is rigged. She's the only one in the Democratic Party, virtually the only one who's saying that. And it's just such a perfect comparison with Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is the game. She is the problem. If you want to see what a perfect illustration of what the Democratic Party has become, just take a look today what's happening, where the Democrats are turning tail and running on this issue of, you know, you can't keep your insurance, which is totally a garbage issue. It is completely, you know, it's completely divorced from what Obama said. That was stupid for them to put it that way. This is a change of the healthcare system. Of course you're going to lose your lousy and deceptive insurance plans. And speaking of the bankruptcy idea, Elizabeth Warren was one of the people who brought to the fore the idea and the fact that a very significant percentage of people that go bankrupt in this country go bankrupt because of poor health insurance. They're insured, and they go bankrupt because they didn't realize that their policies didn't have a lifetime cap, and they have a $1 million bill, and they're liable for $200,000 of it.
Doug, thank you for that. Noam, do you think Elizabeth Warren would agree with that, with Doug's position?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that on the issue that he cites about sort of the system being rigged, I think that is there is a huge amount of emotional resonance surrounding that position. And one of the data points that I think is most profound and really compelling in my mind was if you move, you know, about 1,000 miles west of Massachusetts to South Dakota, there is now a race to succeed the outgoing Democratic Senator Tim Johnson. And the race pits a guy named Mike Rounds, who's the former governor of South Dakota, Republican governor, very well-established, well-known politician in that state, versus a guy named Rick Wyland, who's an obscure former congressional aide to Tom Daschle. Wyland is only 6 points behind Mike Rounds in a recent poll, despite the fact that Mitt Romney carried the state by 18 points. So the state skews overwhelmingly Republican. And what Wyland is running on is a platform of, as he says very explicitly, it is the problem is not government per se. The problem is that powerful interests control the government. And this polls off the charts in South Dakota by a 68-32 margin. People agree with him.
And Noam, I wish we could get to more calls. We've run out of time. I want to quickly summarize one in terms of what the person had hoped to say. Little producer notes here. David from Medfield wanted to say, I used to support Warren until a month ago, but changed my mind because of Obama. I don't think I can ever vote again for someone who doesn't have an administrative background. It's been a disaster. So obviously there are other views out there as well. Noam, I wish we had more time to talk. It's a really interesting article. Our listeners can find it at radioboston.org. Noam is a senior editor at The New Republic, and we've been talking about his recent piece, Hillary's Nightmare, a Democratic Party that realizes its soul lies with Elizabeth Warren. Noam Scheiber, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
A couple of our recent shows have prompted some interesting responses from listeners. Yesterday, we talked about a new approach to easing the housing crunch in Greater Boston, which is pricing many middle-income families out of the region. Among the challenges, the huge number of students in the city who fill up and push up the prices of middle-class housing stock.
Jan Dumas posted this on RadioBoston.org. Want to solve the housing problem in Boston? It's easy. First, every college and university does a 5% across-the-board reduction in students. Then each college university will be required by 2023 to have on-campus housing for three-quarters of all students attending. Next, encourage students to go somewhere else when they graduate. Okay, so not likely to happen, but Jen clearly places a lot of the blame for the Boston area's high rents on students who push up prices.
On Tuesday, we heard from writer Amanda Ripley and her case against high school sports. She argued that compared to many other industrialized countries, U.S. schools spend far too much money and time on sports at the expense of academics.
Listener Kathy agrees. She says, nothing would improve our schools more than eliminating all sports from high school to college. But Ann Barrett pushes back and writes that her daughter, who is ADD, was, quote, a middling student through elementary and middle schools, and her self-esteem suffered.
But then in high school, she joined the cross-country and track teams and became one of the top runners and captain of her team senior year. Her self-esteem went up, and her running helped her get into a good college.
Ann says her daughter's life would be much different today if not for sports, which gave her an opportunity to excel where she was gifted.
We always appreciate hearing from you. The conversation never stops at RadioBoston.org and on Facebook and Twitter, so keep the comments coming.
Stay with us. Still ahead on the program, new music from Dr. Dog, live in our studio. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.